coming up.
Now we're just talking in riddles and doublespeak and who knows what.
Oh, so good.
Oh, that's annoying for you.
Well, it's fresh for me, so I loved it.
I think it's online.
I was going for a snouty feel.
Ah, oh, thank you very much. I'll take that.
It made me feel all Mark Gatiss-y.
There was something ethereal.
I have consumption. I might not last the season.
A wolf in fox's clothing.
One of those hairless monkeys again. Oh, dear.
Oh, my God, that's so exciting.
Let's see if we can find the script so that I can do a seamless transition.
And now, enjoy the podcast.
How do you say that?
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 Hello and welcome to How Do You Say That, sponsored by BritishVoiceOver.co.uk. Here's my co-host, Samantha Boffin.
Hello, and this is my co-host, Mark Rice.
Well, this is the podcast that celebrates voice acting and reminds us all that there isn't just one way to read a script, there are lots of different ways.
And there are indeed. And of course, we've also got a bit of true or false to start everything off. So, Mark, this Christmas, I'm in Panto. And for once, I'm playing a goodie. I'm playing the good fairy. Is that true or false?
You see, I know that you're more akin to baddies, but I'd love to think you're the good fairy. I'm going to say it's true.
Oh, I wish I was, but I'm not. I'm the wicked stepmother. So. Although that is exciting as well.
Typecast.
But the good fairy's got some great lines.
Well, here's my true or false. I once went swimming in a pool in Los Angeles that was right underneath the second L of the Hollywood sign. True or false?
It's on a flipping great hillside. I don't believe that. I'm calling false on that.
It's absolutely true. My dad knew the people that lived in that house underneath the L, and they had a big pool in the back garden.
That's
and we went
so
to spend
cool.
the afternoon with them. It was amazing.
Oh, my God.
When was that? 1981, I think that was.
Oh, your little boy.
Little boy, exactly. Well, let's welcome our special guest for this week. It's voice actor George Wakeman. Hello, George.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, hello, George.
For the people that don't know, let's find out a bit more about George, shall we?
Absolutely. So he was awarded Voice Artist of the Year 2025 at the One Voice Awards
Indeed.
UK and Best Actor in an Indie Film at the New York Film Awards.
Wow.
So both sides of the pond. I'm very impressed with that. So having trained in the UK and Russia, George has used his versatility both vocally and physically to develop a career in screen acting, voiceover and motion capture. And his roles include Obelix in the ongoing series of Asterix and Obelix games, the lead villain of Spencer in the British indie feature film Tiny Little Voices, and Daddy and Grandpa Pig in Peppa Pig Tales. Woo.
Well, he also played a guest lead on the BBC's Doctors, was award-nominated for his roles in Black Myth Wukong, and contributed to the BAFTA-winning game Metaphor ReFantazio, among others. George has narrated over 70 audiobooks as well. Wow.
Wow.
It's quite a career so far, George. Have you got a fun fact for us?
I did think I was just going to say I play dodgeball, which is where I'm heading right after this recording to get walloped in the face. But actually, my fun fact, because I'm really overexcited about it, is I've shifted away slightly from audiobooks, and I've written my own book. Called Gathering Giants, which is a murder thriller wildlife adventure set on an Ice Age Jurassic Park-esque place in 2099 after the Second American Civil War.
Are you self-publishing?
Wow.
No, I've literally today been writing off to literary agents with the first line, "It was only after the drone made its second pass over the mammoth herd that Yorgi saw the blood on the ice." So
nice.
We're off to the races.
So many genres there in one crazy book.
It's very confusing.
That's
it's
incredible.
Like, what genre would you place it in? I'm like, the one that you want me to play.
That sounds amazing. Of course, presumably you're going to do the audio version,
I suppose.
I think
I probably would have to, wouldn't I?
You
but I'm going to demand a very high fee from myself, I think.
Of course you are.
Yes,
absolutely. Well, with that bookish delight, let's have a look at the first script of our show, shall we, and ask, how do you say that?
How do you say that?
So I've brought along a very seasonal script.
Yes, it's Christmassy.
And it was not for the UK market.
Okay, so what do we need to know about?
Well, it's an advert for something that is happening in the States.
Yes.
So it runs in the States.
Is it very archetypal British then, if it's running in America?
Well, Yes, because it's set in Victorian London,
yes.
It's an experience.
Yes.
And so I suppose they were looking... It's interesting in that we went through a couple of different ideas, or quite a few different ideas of what we should do in terms of voice, in terms of accent, actually.
Yep.
Because it was Dickensian,
yes.
So Victorian, we did flirt a little bit with a bit of a Cockney accent.
Okay.
Oh, lovely.
We did do a little bit of, you know, Nancy kind
of
thing.
Okay.
You know,
well, that's good. Because I was thinking the other way. But yeah,
yes,
interesting.
No, we came. The interesting thing was that actually, while we all preferred that,
yes,
in many we came away from that because it was being played in the States, and they were worried that unless we went down the route of a very, if you like, conventional British accent, it may not translate as well.
I was thinking more Holmes-esque than Cockney-esque.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of wanted to do a little bit of a Nancy.
I'm just really excited by it. There's so many options with it. I mean,
there
I
are.
Don't know if you want to stick with the Cockney, but there's a lot of... I suppose what the... When you say a commercial, is it on TV? Is it on the radio?
No, I think it's online.
Okay, cool. Perfect.
Yeah.
Just good to know which medium we're working in.
I was going to say, I'd be thrilled to see what different ideas you guys are bringing to it, because I think it's got lots of different possibilities, this.
Mm. Yes. Okay. All right, well, I'll give it a go.
Christmas Eve, 1853. Step into the heart of Victorian London, where darkness comes alive. The candles gutter, the snow falls, and somewhere in the fog, a whisper calls your name. This holiday season, journey beyond the ordinary into a world of ghosts and forgotten tales, where every spirit has a story to share. Discover the magic in every haunting at the Christmas séance. Listen. The ghosts are waiting.
Oh, what did you think, George?
I think it was, I mean, I'm going. I'm going to go and see it.
Let's go.
I'm going to go.
I'll take that as a win then.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like you've got a lantern, like holding it up, just said, yes. Ah, yes, my friend's
totally.
Come this way.
And a top hat.
Yeah,
very
top
definitely
hat,
had a top hat.
Possibly with a frayed top of it, like so there could be like a cat in it or something.
Ooh.
And you're like, ah, my friend.
Yeah, I like it.
Cat in
I like it.
It's quite random, but I like it. I like
it. Isn't that what top hats were for?
Possibly so, yes.
To put your animals in.
Yeah, it was exactly. A rabbit that came out of a top hat.
Hey, oh, that, sorry. I got tricked into thinking that what I got was a cat, but it's actually a rabbit.
It was actually a rabbit.
Weird cat with long ears.
It was very light. I mean, it was very characterful, so you were definitely a character. Mm. But you chose to be quite light.
Yes.
And diary-esque almost.
Yeah. I went diary-esque because I thought with the opening thing, Christmas Eve 1853, as a line, it was either a letter being written or a diary entry like that is what I was thinking.
So interesting. It's always really interesting, the choices that people make. I do. Because I really liked that, you know, as a concept.
George, do you fancy a go?
Oh, yes, please. Very much so.
I wonder where you're going to go with it.
Okay. Christmas Eve, 1853. Step into the heart of Victorian London, where darkness comes alive. The candles gutter, the snow falls, and somewhere in the fog, a whisper calls your name. This holiday season, journey beyond the ordinary, into a world of ghosts and forgotten tales, where every spirit has a story to share. Discover the magic in every haunting at the Christmas Seance. Listen, the ghosts are waiting.
Shiver up my spine. That was older than I was expecting you to go, interestingly. At the beginning, there was a bit of vocal fry on age there, and I thought that was really nice as we stepped into the heart of Victorian London.
Oh, do you know, I loved it. That, do you know what that reminded me of? It made me feel all Mark Gatiss-y.
Yes.
Ah, oh, thank you very much. I'll take that.
Because that was a lot of atmosphere in that.
You could feel the fog almost coming in, couldn't you?
Yes. Yeah.
That was one of my reviews, Foggy.
Foggy, yes.
A bit foggy, actor. But it's such a beautiful script. And I think there's something which we sort of have lost in the modern era of Christmas, which is all sort of commercialised with that.
Yes.
Somewhat threatening. You
the know, darker
the
side.
Start
yes.
of most of... A Christmas Carol or Scrooge is. I remember being very scared, even by the Muppets when I was a kid. I'm like, oh, there's a big thing over there. I'm not keen on that.
Yes.
And it's a really lovely script as well. It's like the writing of candles guttering and
indeed.
Snow falling. You're like, it can be threatening this wind. And I mean, that's where Christmas Day comes in, because it's almost like the light after.
It brings the joy.
The winter.
Yes.
I think they layered in afterwards, you know, a lot of kind of sounds and swirling fog and music. It was quite atmospheric, I think.
I would have liked to hear that. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Oh, Sam, so I guess obviously we're two men and you're a lady doing it. So they didn't go for the Cockney Nancy in the end.
No, I kind of rather fancied that to do. Well, I mean, nobody would be surprised as to what I did. And that's what you're booked for, isn't it, I suppose?
So well, true. Yes.
I'll do what I did. Do what I did. Christmas Eve, 1853. Step into the heart of Victorian London, where darkness comes alive. The candles gutter, the snow falls, and somewhere in the fog, a whisper calls your name. This holiday season, journey beyond the ordinary, into a world of ghosts and forgotten tales, where every spirit has a story to share. Discover the magic in every haunting at the Christmas séance. Listen, the ghosts are waiting.
There was something scary about that. There was something ethereal about that right at the beginning. And also when you got to listen, it's like, oh, my God.
Yes.
It was very evocative.
I thought it was brilliant. I think there was an intriguing note of, I hesitate to say seduction, but it was there. It felt
like there
was someone. I mean, the Nancy we talked about, there was a certain like, it felt like, oh my God, she's slightly seducing, but also saying, I have consumption. I might not last the season, but I must tell you about this. I was like, oh gosh, this is very kind of, you must hear this now because it might not be available some other time.
Play How Do You Say That?
Well, it's worthwhile remembering that these are real scripts we're working on, but we've changed some names and details to avoid copyright issues. Remember, you can find both the scripts we're using today in the show notes of this episode.
Okay, so George, you've brought along a script today for us, but actually, Mark and I have only just literally seen this script.
Yes, done something different with this week. We haven't seen it until 5 minutes ago.
Yes, yeah. I know. I'm afraid I've been a little cheeky because I've been bouncing around various studios, and the thing with this is that you audition for something, you think, oh my God, that was really cool, and you see a piece of artwork or make some choices with a character that you've got, maybe even in the room, and then by the time you get cast, I'm like, I can't remember which one this was. It was a different code name for the game than it is now, and it's not the name of the final game, and and then you might only get a few minutes to prep before you go in, and you're no, yes. They say, have you had any thoughts about the character? You're like, well, yes, one thought, and going, one thought, what on earth's going on? But so yes, I appreciate that you letting me do that and be a little bit cheeky with you. So
you've sent us a graphic that we will put on Facebook, and we will put within the show notes on BritishVoiceOver.co.uk, and basically, it looks a bit like a fox, potentially, like a white fox. But I'm thinking like a magician. He has a sword in his hand. He looks poised and a little bit evil.
Yes, well, I think you're very much on the money there. I definitely think the magician aspect is something that gets played with.
Well, the other line that you sent us about him, known as the Baron, he's gold-obsessed, he's a crime kingpin, and has a particular hatred for another operator called Midas. I think that's quite useful in the lines, just scanning the lines here. Yeah. Mm. But these are all standalone lines, aren't they?
It was a really interesting chat, because you have to sort of convey a mini story in every line, but when you put them all together, as we'll do here, I don't know if we're going to do all of them, but when you put them together, you do get a flavour of who this guy is.
Yeah.
So, okay, George, so in every single scene, if you like, he is talking to his henchmen, sometimes single, sometimes a little group of henchmen. Yeah.
And it looks like he doesn't like them very much.
Okay. He doesn't seem to like anybody very much. He likes gold. He doesn't like that other people have gold. Mm.
From the visuals that we've got, he looks pretty confident, pretty sly. He's a fox.
Yes. He's actually a wolf, so but he has a lot of fox qualities.
Okay. A wolf in fox's clothing.
Yes.
Okay, so that's useful. So he's a wolf. Okay.
Go on, Sam. See if you can bring him to life for us.
Okay. All right, okay. I don't care if the workshop scares you. Deliver the gold or face your punishment. If any of you see Midas in the field, you know where to aim. I want those golden hands mounted on the walls of my study. Then why are you talking and not shooting? There are outlaws in my home. What am I paying you for? Eliminate them! If you want to become wealthy beyond imagining, bring me the man with the golden hands.
Ooh.
Excellent.
Certainly got a character that one liked gold and two hated the people that were working for him.
Excellent work. Are you trying to shed that unpleasant character?
What I probably didn't do, because it was done fairly quickly, is get an idea of my surroundings. What I did do was work out whether I was speaking up close and personal or whether I was speaking to a group.
Yes, and that came across nicely.
But I think I would have liked to have, personally, studied a little bit more about what made a decision, actually, not so much studied, made a decision on what he was holding in his hand, where he physically was, whether these henchmen were all around him. I would have liked to have had made in my mind more choices of the physicality of where he was.
I think that's a great note. I think it gives you. I mean, what was interesting is a lot of the choices you made were very, very familiar. I was like, this is like, as in they basically. Some of them corresponded to pretty much how the character ended up, which was really lovely to hear.
Okay. It's great fun. And you're absolutely right, George. Because, of course, you can't possibly... you'd never get through a video game session, if they had to set the scene every single time you did.
True.
No, I mean that's the thing. Each line is, as you said, a standalone mini scene. And so you have to sort of develop that kind of... quick fire ability, you know, not shoot from the hip in terms of not being, you know, thorough about it, but to kind of to make choices and be bold with them without being too hamstrung by the fact of like, my God, what is this? Like, we're trained as actors to be interrogating the script and all the rest of it. And then you get it 2 minutes before and you're like, oh, cool, blimey, guff.
But I do think, considering you'd only just seen that, Sam, that there were a lot of really good choices made there.
Absolutely.
And actually a character that was fairly well-rounded, I thought, from the information that we had.
I don't know. You can always, there's loads and loads of things that you can always do if you have more information, isn't there?
But, true.
And I think, as I say, I would have loved to, but I mean, we don't always get this luxury. What I was going to say was I would love to have known more about the world, but equally, the world doesn't necessarily exist at the point that you're doing these lines. So in fact, I'm so fascinated about how you two do it as well. That's what I really want to listen to.
Well, I'm scared now because now it's my go. It's like, I was hoping you'd continue talking for longer, but okay, I'll give it a go. But I'm going to take on board quite a lot of what you just said. And I have an idea in my mind where it's set and how many people are around him. So it's like, all right, here goes. I don't care if the workshop scares you. Deliver the gold or face your punishment. If any of you see Midas in the field, you know where to aim. I want those golden hands mounted on the walls of my study. Then why are you talking and not shooting? There are outlaws in my home. What am I paying you for? Eliminate them! If you want to become wealthy beyond imagining, bring me the man with the golden hands!
Fantastic.
So was not expecting that, Mark.
What accent would you say that was?
I was going for foxy, wolfy, kind of snouty.
Yes,
feel.
There was a snout.
I was going for a snouty feel.
In yes. the nasal.
That's what I was trying to bring.
Very good.
And on the second line, very definitely, there were a lot of henchmen out in the field.
Yes,
addressing them.
I tell you what was interesting about it. You reminded me of the fox from Pinocchio.
Interesting.
In that you had a slyness to you, but I knew or I felt that there was something that wasn't quite, wholly confident in you.
Yes, there was a sort of a bullyish element to him. He was a bit of a drawl and then a kind of like, oh, you again.
Yes.
I mean, this is harsh because it's like, this is a character that I've had a lot of time with. So I say that with a full caveat of like, you've just got it. And I mean, what was really interesting was that there were elements from both reads that did definitely make it into my final interpretation of it. Mm. I think what I would say for Sam's, I think there was a certain exasperation when I did him as a kind of like, almost like sort of slightly like middle management, but also a savouring that he's just like, can't get away from the deliciousness of not just the gold, but also kind of doing harm to people, which is, it's difficult to sort of reacquaint yourself with. He's just like, oh, he doesn't just say kill him. He's just like, I want, you know, what he says about the golden hands and eliminating and
that's such a good point because you can really relish those aspects of it, can't you?
There is an insecurity with him, which I think, Mark, you brought out there with that sort of drawl, but I think I might have given him a bit more power because he is the kingpin of this.
Yeah, and he was a bit measly in the end, wasn't he?
I think a little bit. Maybe that was a young him. Maybe that was him before he got his whole... He's like, you know, it's when you see those old De Niro films where he's just like wandering around the Bronx or something and then he becomes the boss and later on. So,
yeah.
But I think there's definitely a slight... Not so much... And this is where the genre comes in, which I haven't really given you, which is a sort of larger than life. Although you both did create that, I think because it's a bloody wolf with a cloak and a cane.
Indeed. Yeah.
But it's a rare treat because I chose this one because it's something really special to me. I kind of wanted to see what other people made of it because you fire off all these auditions and I certainly don't know and I don't think any of us really know sometimes what it is that we get right,
exactly.
That we do differently. Yep. And it's really interesting to see the similarities that come out, but also the differences. So it's a real treat to hear you guys doing it.
We've got to look for the nuance within every single line.
Yes. Yes.
So when you sort of said immediately, the minute you said, of course, he's almost salivating over this idea of gold. Well, of course, the gold is there all the way through it. And actually being able to really lean into
that part
gives you such a potential to put much more nuance in there.
I want the treat now to hear you do it, George.
Okay, here we go. So this is shall I tell you where he's from now after all this?
Yes, please
do. So this is Fletcher Kane, aka the Baron, from Fortnite.
Oh, right.
Okay. They're all little found audio bits. Yeah. And he's very much his own thing, whereas most of the time the Fortnite players are just trying to get, like him, get cash, get to the centre and win the day. But this is Fletcher Kane with all his drollness. Okay. I don't care if the workshop scares you. Deliver the gold or face your punishment. If any of you see Midas in the field, you know where to aim. I want those golden hands mounted on the walls of my study.
We've had a Midas sighting, sir.
Then why are you talking and not shooting? There are outlaws in my home. What am I paying you for? Eliminate them! If you want to become wealthy beyond imagining, bring me the man with the golden hands.
What you brought through there was a multi-dimensional character. I saw exactly where every time the gold was mentioned, there was a sneer to it almost.
Or a salivation.
It
was just that kind of.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And at the point of eliminate them, I was quaking.
And a real growl, actually,
through
it all.
With the wolf.
Which reminds you of the wolfishness, which I loved as a kind of extra, an extra treat.
He's very unusual, and I think that he'd kind of go like, nobody really understands me. And most of those who think they do are just blooming useless. So there's a lot of kind of, ugh, another human.
Yes.
One of those hairless monkeys again. Oh, dear.
I love it.
It's great fun as well because I realised, like, many, many moons later, that after having played Daddy and Grandpa Pig in Peppa Pig Tales, I now am the big bad wolf for the little pigs.
I love that.
So
yes.
It's a very weird kind of round the houses sort of thing.
I mean, I have to say, I do love Daddy Pig. Daddy Pig is one of my favourite characters in the world.
Well, that's very kind of you.
So, it's time for the wildcard bit of the show and time to approach these scripts in a different way.
Oh, yes.
Let's see.
So, George, can you pick one of the scripts and give one of us a new motivation or a character or something different to do with them?
Yes, I can. sorry, I went a bit Fletcher Kane myself.
Yes, I can.
I was thinking of this when we were starting and chatting about this. Ooh, I think Sam... I think what I'd like you to do is the Fletcher Kane lines, but straight. So sort of, I don't mean straight as in just flat, but I mean in kind of remains of the day, very like earnest. But I would also like you to bear in mind that Midas is in fact the one you love, but he has spurned you. So he...
Okay.
And everything to do with gold... is a reminder of that dreadful man, woman, whatever it is, that Midas is just, you wanted him, you want him, but you just want to hurt him as well.
Oh, wow, gosh.
Oh, it's deep. Okay.
What do you feel, Sam? Do you think he's spurned you and you want your revenge? Or do you think, I think it's more like you had something beautiful, but he has just sullied
it. I think I'd rather do that. I think I'd rather do that because revenge puts us back in the kind of, okay.
Yes.
Oh, well, I'll do my best for this.
I'm sure you will.
Okay. I don't care if the workshop scares you. Deliver the gold or face your punishment. If any of you see Midas in the field, you know where to aim. I want those golden hands mounted on the walls of my study. Then why are you talking and not shooting? There are outlaws in my home. What am I paying you for? Eliminate them? If you want to become wealthy beyond imagining, bring me the man with the golden hands.
Fantastic. I want to just do one tiny little thing on that last line. Sam, that was brilliant. I was just, I'm here hopping, just going, whoop. But that last one, let's put a bounty on Midas's head. You love him, but you hate him. And there's a bunch of people around you who can bring this guy to you, and you want to incentivize them. I'm thinking Cersei Lannister. I'm thinking, or anybody you care to channel. You are a woman scorned, but people do not get away from you.
Okay. If you want to be wealthy beyond imagining, bring me the man with the golden hands.
I don't know.
I'm lucky. My hands are just pink and sweaty at the moment, so that's... I'm feeling very safe. Well done.
There was a very Shakespearean heroine... feel to that. There really was. There was almost a Juliet feel to it.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking Lady Macbeth.
I thought it was lighter than Lady Macbeth.
I was going to say.
Right. I think for the earlier ones, yes. Yep. I think that last one maybe had a
Lady Macbeth. But something very Shakespearean.
Thinking Austin.
Yes,
well,
the
yes.
The Outlaws in My Home one, definitely. It felt very much like, my goodness, I must get the pistols. It was excellent. Oh my God, I didn't know if that would work. And you absolutely nailed it, Sam. I'm so excited.
Well, George, I wonder if you're going to be excited about what I'm about to give you.
Uh-oh.
As I said, one of your characters, Daddy Pig, is one of my favourite animation characters of all time. I'd like you to do the Christmas Eve script.
Yes.
As Daddy Pig.
Oh, yes.
Okay, let's see if we can find the script so that I can do a seamless transition. Okay, right. Christmas Eve, 1853. Step into the heart of Victorian London, where darkness comes alive. The candles gutter, the snow falls, Pepper, and somewhere in the fog, A whisper calls your name. This holiday season, journey beyond the ordinary into a world of ghosts and forgotten tales, where every spirit has a story to share. Discover the magic in every haunting at the Christmas seance. Listen, the ghosts are waiting.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I kind of wanted you to do the whole podcast as Daddy Pig, to be honest with you, George.
You wouldn't be the first. My godsons, when I saw them this weekend, and my godson would ask me a question, and I'd answer, and then he said, "And what does Daddy Pig think?" I'm like, he thinks the same as me.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Oh. I love the way you're like, I'm not sure if you'll be excited about this. I'm like, I think I will be. I'll be fine.
I will love it. I will love it.
Just me then, quickly to go.
It's just you. I would like you to be a book clubber who hasn't read the book.
Okay. Yes.
And I think I'm going to give you the first script.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Magnificent.
Okay. I've been in this situation, so I should be able to channel it. All right then. Yeah, Christmas Eve, 1853. Step into the heart of Victorian London. Darkness comes alive. The candles gutter, the snowfalls, and somewhere in the fog, a whisper calls your name. This holiday season, journey beyond the ordinary into a world of ghosts and forgotten tales, where every spirit has a story to share. Discover the magic in every haunting at the Christmas seance. Hey, listen, the ghosts are waiting.
Sounds like you're the Buster Cat.
Sir, sorry, the Uber's here. I'll be off.
Sorry.
That's not the book I read. Well, if you want to play along in the privacy of your own booth, as I said before, we put the scripts in the show notes. You can have a try yourself.
Yes.
A Victorian London.
Absolutely. So, George, you tell stories in so many different ways, but voiceover is an oddity because all of the traditional props that actors use just simply aren't there. Everything lives in the breath, basically. So how do you access the emotional truth when it's just you, a microphone, and nothing else?
Ooh. I think in a way, it's how you build the character. Sort of you've placed some, whether it's emotional building blocks or physical ones in terms of how you're sitting or how you're delivering the voice. So, and I think the temptation is to think, oh, you've got one old gruff character or you've got one wolf or something. Whereas the reality is it's all, it sounds a bit obvious, but it's all you and you're just sort of giving yourself different kit. So if you like, it's kind of your costume. So like with Fletcher Caine, finding the truth, I mean, you know, I certainly am aware that when you go to some museum or something, you see jewels and treasure, you're like, oh my God, that's great. That's really good. Mm. And then you're thinking, oh God, can we just get this train to run on time? So you just so you've got those bits of kit, as it were, that you put on your character. And then you sort of assess the genre or whatever it is and up the dial. So it's like, if I'm just like, oh God, this train's delayed. It's like, why is this train delayed again? So you're emphasizing it more than
yes.
that. You mentioned at the very top of the show that I did study in Russia as well for 2 weeks, but it was at Moscow School of Arts, Stanislavski's old alma mater. And the best piece of advice I got was from Sergei, the acting tutor there. And he said, you are always your character's lawyer. Whatever the character's going through, you're on their side insofar as a lawyer is. You know, I saw Ralph Fiennes and they said, what about Voldemort? He said, very, very misunderstood. And so with this, it's like whatever you're in, it matters to you. And I think if you can be authentic with that, even if he or she is denying the facts to themselves, you're there. You're their lawyer. And you're like, no, I'm going to be right behind it. And then the fun is that you put on the different bits of kit and that's where you can access a truthful emotion. And also, if you are asked to do 5 different wolves, or in one audiobook case for me, 5 crones, 5 older women who had to be crones. And they were like, one of them, I'll do this sort of like, there's a lady down here, so she's sort of doing it like that. But then it's like, and then he went round, and then 3 chapters later, he's met another crone. So I was like, oh no, darling, so I'm up here, something like that. It's the same emotional truth, but we've gone somewhere completely different.
Yes.
So I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors in a way. It may be the same heart of both those characters, but in just a slight redirection of the breath, as you said, Sam, then you can create something authentically different, because people are authentically different. If there's five old women in a room, they'll have all had a massive life experience, and it only takes one or two experiences to change a character fundamentally.
George, that is a fascinating breakdown of it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I have had a whale of a time, and I'm hoping to play a whale next so that I can...
It's been wonderful.
Well, but, just...
No, sorry. It's been great fun, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
A reminder that all of George Wakeman's details can be found in the show notes.
Yes, and of course the scripts and the pictures are there too.
Well, that's it for this week. Thanks again to George Wakeman. We'll be back next week with more scripts and another voiceover guest when we'll be asking...
How do you say that? How do you say that?